Shotgun. Marino throws deep downfield. It is caught by Fryer. Yes! Touchdown! Touchdown, Dolphins!
With in-depth analysis on the Miami Dolphins.
The Rangers call! That's on 4th and 5!
Live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios.
In my opinion, the greatest fans in the NFL, Miami Dolphin fans.
DolphinsTalk.com daily.
All right, Miami! How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. I am your host, Mike, and we are broadcasting live from the DolphinsTalk.com studios on this Monday, July the 16th. And we got a great show for you today, as later on in the podcast, I will be joined by Brian Miller from FinFanatic.com as we do a bit of a training camp preview show, break down the Miami Dolphins roster position by position, talk about the guys we like heading into this season, some guys we're not so high on, and what guys are going to be in some training camp battles that will be key to watch as a training camp is near, folks. We're getting there. This week, the rookies will be reporting for training camp, and then next week we have all the veterans reporting, so training camp is pretty much upon us now, and football season is around the corner, so later on in the podcast, I will be chatting with Brian Miller from FinFanatic.com to do a bit of a preview of the Miami Dolphins roster as we are close to camp. Before that, though, a couple quick things. First, once again, I would like to thank Seth Levitt and OJ McDuffie from The Fish Tank at Five Reasons Sports for joining me on the podcast last week and talking about their new podcast. Always great to have OJ on. We've had him on this podcast numerous times, countless times, and always great when he can join us. And everyone, be sure to check out their new podcast, The Fish Tank. I've listened to all the shows so far. They really are good. The two-part one with Channing Crowder really is a must-listen if you are a fan of the Miami Dolphins. It really is must-listen. So just wanted to thank them. Also, we here at our website, DolphinsTalk.com, are now on Instagram. So be sure to follow us on Instagram at DolphinsTalk. We have a link right up on the main page of our site. If you go to the main page of our site, DolphinsTalk.com, on the right-hand side, we got links to our Facebook page, we got links to our now Instagram page, we got links to my Twitter account, as well as our YouTube channel, which we're about to launch here soon, and as well as our iTunes. So, and with the podcast about to shift now as we get towards, I guess you could say, in season mode, be sure to subscribe to our podcast, whether on SoundCloud or iTunes or wherever you listen. So be sure to do that. Also, this year we do have a weekly spot on our podcast with Antoine Staley from the USA Today. He is a Miami Dolphins reporter for USA Today. I spoke to Antoine late last week, and we sort of set up the schedule for this season. So be on the lookout for that. Antoine will be joining us each week on the podcast to talk Miami Dolphins football. So I know he's one of our more popular guests we have on the podcast. So just wanted to announce that that is going to happen. Antoine Staley will do a weekly spot with us on the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Like I said, there's really not much happening right now in the world of the Miami Dolphins. The only news story I really want to talk about is the one that came out Saturday afternoon by Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald, in which, and we've sort of talked about this in the past. I remember when I had on Chris Fisher from NBC6 in Miami, we spoke about this probably about 2 months ago, and the story has been slow developing, but the latest report is that the Miami Dolphins are going to move, most likely move their team headquarters, obviously. That's been the rumor, that's been the talk, and the three options are they're going to stay in Davie, Florida, where they are now, and just expand it. They're going to move to Miramar, Florida, which up until Saturday, we thought that was the clubhouse leader. That was the one that was the most attractive option. But now we have new news as of right now that the Miami Dolphins are looking at building their training facility, brand new, state-of-the-art, all the bells and whistles, right at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens on the west side of Hard Rock Stadium. There's some land there that is large enough. It would cost the owner, Mr. Stephen Ross, upward of $75 million. And it sounds like, as of right now, that is now the new clubhouse leader of what the plan is. Again, nothing's official, nothing's finalized. All three options are still on the table. But from this latest report here from Adam Beasley of the Miami Herald, it does sound like the moving to Miami Gardens, Hard Rock Stadium, is picking up steam. It would put all the team employees at the same place, on the same physical address. You've had the people who handled the tickets and the business staff. They've been working at the stadium for all these years. And then you've got the football operations people working in Davie. If they were to move here, you'd have everyone under one roof, one place. Makes the most sense logistically. And I think, look, if I was in charge, and obviously I'm not, it's not my $75 million to spend, I think this makes the most sense. I know the New York Giants, they have a setup this way where everything's at one spot. They're at MetLife Stadium, and then they also have their training facility at MetLife. I know the Buffalo Bills, even though it's an older stadium and an older facility, they have it set up the same way. Everything's at one spot. And I think for Miami, this does make the most sense. We'll see, though. Like I said, nothing's official. But if this does happen, wherever, it sounds like it's going to happen quick, because the Miami Dolphins want to be in a new facility by 2020. And right now we are in July of 2018. So if this does happen, wherever, whether it's in Miramar or whether it's in Miami Gardens, it seems like it's going to happen quick, and they will be in that facility by 2020. So I want to touch on that because we have talked about that a few times on this podcast. Like I said, last time was when I had on Chris Fisher from NBC6 in Miami, and we sort of talked about this because I know currently the location in Davie, Florida is very nice, but it's also, I think it's the third smallest in the NFL. So, you know, they want to expand. It's one of those things where you have to keep up and you have to keep growing. They've been there for 25 years. For anyone who has been to that facility, it is very nice. Nobody's saying it's not, but it might be time that they, you know, grow it and get something more state-of-the-art, something larger. So it looks like they will be moving. And where? If you had a bet right now today, it looks like Miami Gardens. So just wanted to talk about that. We're going to take a quick break. And when I come back, I will be joined by Brian Miller from FinFanatic.com talking about the Miami Dolphins roster as we head into training camp and do a little roster preview, training camp preview. So sit tight, and we'll be back right after this.
Simbad Sports is the number one sports memorabilia company in South Florida and the number one place to go get your Miami Dolphins memorabilia. Simbad Sports has the likes of Rashad Jones, Cam Wake, Kiko Alonso, and Frank Gore in for autograph signings within the past year alone. So when in South Florida area, visit Simbad Sports at 1976 South University Drive, Davie, Florida. Tell them DolphinsTalk.com sent you.
On the hotline is Brian Miller from FinFanatic.com. Brian, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, Mike. Thanks for having me on. It's been long overdue. I keep telling you I'm going to come on, and I finally get to come on.
I know. Finally glad to have you on here. Before we start, why don't you tell everyone about your website, how long you've been doing it, and tell people about it, because I promote it at the end of each one of our shows, but it's good to have someone on like you who've been running a website for so many years. And tell us a little bit about your website.
Well, we're kind of like the third home for Dolphin Stock because I try to promote all your shows as well.
I know.
But no, seriously, I've been the editor at FinFanatic.com for 11 and a half years. I was the first person that was hired by the FanSided Network, which has blossomed into this massive company that we are now part of Time Network or Time Magazine. Time Inc., whatever it is. I was, like I said, the first person that was hired. There was two sites back then, FinFanatic and then a Kansas City Chiefs site. And it kind of grew. I was actually a member of the Miami Herald Forum back 12 years ago. Yeah. And I was, pretty active there. The guys came on looking for a writer, and everybody that was on there recommended they talk to me. So I guess you could say the rest is history.
Yep, absolutely. And everyone check out the website, FinFanatic.com. Let's talk first here about the Miami Dolphins of today, 2018. Been a bit of a crazy offseason, to say the least. A lot of guys are now gone. A lot of new faces are in town. I guess from a overall standpoint, do you think the team heading into 2018 is better today than it was 1 year ago at this time? Assuming everyone's healthy, you're not going to assume, you know, we're going to lose our starting quarterback here the first week of camp. But just how do you think we look heading into this year compared to last year?
Well, I definitely think that we're better on paper than we were last year. And I think what we've seen in the field, there's a lot of different personalities that I think are going to mix a lot better. But I'll go one step further. I think this is a better football team on paper than 2016. I think 2016's playoff team is kind of more indicative of what this team is than last year. I think last year was a massive anomaly. Jay Cutler brought nothing to the table in terms of leadership or play on the field. There were struggles along the offensive line. And a lot of that stuff has been fixed. And when you start looking at the offseason moves, we don't have the flashy names, and we've lost the flashy names. We lost Sue. We lost Jarvis Landry. But we've brought in guys that are from winning organizations like Danny Amendola. We've brought in guys that have a team-first mentality instead of a me-first mentality. And I think that that's something important. And I think when you look at the whole thing, and we kept hearing culture change until it was driven down our throat, this isn't so much about culture change as it is about head coach Adam Gase getting players that are going to buy into his system and actually listen to how he's trying to coach and then go out in the field and do that. And I think when you see a guy like Danny Amendola cussing himself out on the sidelines for dropping a pass in a mini camp, that's the kind of tone that is set for the rest of the team, because these younger guys are going to look at him and go, he's won a Super Bowl. He's played with Tom Brady. If this is how he's going to act over dropping a pass, I need to step up my game. And I think that's really what this Dolphins team is going to be like this year.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And if you, and like you said, if you compare this team to the team in 2016, I think the one thing that really stands out is on defense, that side of the ball. This team is more athletic. Now, it's also more raw, but I think it's got more athletes on that side of the ball, which I think will make that unit and that side of the ball much improved from what we saw in 2016 and 2017. Because in those 2 years, I mean, let's be honest, we've been pretty bad on defense. And I'm not saying we're going to be great this year, but I think we're going to be improved just because we have more speed on that side of the ball and more flexibility and more depth. It's hard to replace Sue, if not impossible, but I think we're starting to make strides on that side of the ball.
Well, I think, Mike, when you look at the defensive side of the ball, specifically the defensive line, and you just mentioned Ndamukong Suh being gone, over the last 3 years that he's been there, the Dolphins' defense is ranked pretty close to the bottom. So it's not like you have a whole lot further to fall without him.
Correct.
But you have a lot of room to improve with him. And I think the problem that I have with Suh is he's not a guy that people are going to look up to in the locker room. He might lead by example with his preparedness and how he handles certain things, but he's not a guy that's going to get in your face. A lot of these young guys, if they have questions, if they wanted to ask him his opinion, there was a trepidation before they would walk up and say, hey, Sue, let me ask you, what would you do in this situation? And I've heard a lot of stories that these young guys really didn't feel comfortable walking up and doing that. So there was a disconnect. Now you take Sue out of the picture. You put a guy like Devin Godshaw in there who's going to play more now. You've got Robert Quinn who can slide down and play in that four technique if absolutely necessary up here and there. You've got William Hayes. You've got a lot of good defensive linemen. You've got Akeem Spence that we brought in as well. You're losing the name, but you're not losing a lot of the talent because Sue was not able to do it himself. And I think what we're going to see here is – there's going to be a little bit more diversity in guys making plays. In the past, we watched teams go away from Sue, and now that pocket where he was at is going to get used, which is going to allow some of these other guys to start making plays. And I think the linebackers are going to get more involved, and I think that was really a big thing too, because the linebacker play for the Dolphins has been pretty horrific for the last several years.
Sure has been.
And now we've got a real shot. And I've got to tell you, my favorite guy that I'm looking forward to seeing this year is Raekwon McMillan, because what I've seen out of him in training camp, the people that I've talked to down there that have watched him, that have been in the building, they are impressed with how this guy, this kid, is stepping into a leadership role and is not afraid to tell people where to line up. That is a sign of a player who's really confident. And if he can come back from that injury, this guy could really change things around for our defense.
Absolutely. Yeah, because last year this time, he was getting rave reviews, and everyone was so excited to see him. And then that freak injury on a punt, running on a punt, just sort of ruined all that for him. So I think he will be a big upgrade at well as linebacker. And I just think overall on that side of the ball, just much more flexibility in the secondary. Like I've been saying on this podcast for weeks, our secondary right now has a lot of depth, and it also has a lot of young talent. It probably hasn't been this good since the early 2000 days. Now, I'm not saying it's as good as it was when he had Madison in it and Surtain, but this group is probably the closest we've had to something like that.
Yes.
Group, talent-wise, because we have a lot of depth and a lot of guys who I think can really play.
Well, this is the best part about this defense is there's no egos right now. The yep. biggest ego on the defensive side of the ball belongs to Rashad Jones, who has proven that he belongs there. Cameron Wake has no ego whatsoever, and nobody else does. This is a unit that could develop into something really quick because you mentioned the youth, and these young guys are playing together. They're breaking into this together. They're going through everything together. And then you bring the new veterans in who are going through this for the first time under Adam Gase, and they're actually going to look to these guys like Tankersley and Howard and say, hey, how does he want this done? And now all of a sudden, these young players aren't the young players. They're the guys that the veterans are going to ask a couple questions as well. And that builds a team character. That builds a bond. And like you, we may start off slow in some positions on defense, but I really think the core is there. I love the linebacker unit for what it is. I've got high expectations for them. So we'll see what happens. But there's a lot of potential here for this team.
Absolutely. And I think one of the guys who's going to be really, really key this year will be Xavien Howard. If he picks up where he left off last year, I think the sky is the limit. Because when you have one of those guys who will be a lockdown, true number one, guy who can sort of take a wide receiver out of a game, which at the end of last year, that's what he was doing. So if that sort of rolls over into this year, it just changes the whole way you play on that side of the ball. When you have that much faith in a guy to take a wide receiver out of a game and sort of pick off balls and be just that sort of an impact player, he's the key to me. Because if he continues to grow and picks up where he left off, I think it changes everything else about that side of the ball on defense.
Yes, it's a confidence builder, that's for sure. When he had those two interceptions last year, it kind of was like a wake-up call, almost one of those things that he was, you know, I can do this. I can play at this level. And we saw a difference in him for the rest of the year. So I do expect him to go out and play that way. I'm very interested about Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Me too.
And how they're going to use him, because this guy is so versatile. Where did you put him on the field? You don't really want to take T.J. McDonald off the field if he starts playing like he should. You're obviously not going to take Jones off. So now you're talking about maybe a McCain or a Lippitt. I honestly don't know. I'm almost curious. You put him at linebacker and let him roam?
Yeah, I spoke about this on the podcast this week because there was in the Miami Herald with Barry Jackson. He quoted a PFF stat, which last year at Alabama, Minkah only played safety 7% of the snaps. And he was the nickel cornerback 64%, and I believe linebacker at like 20-something percent. So I know Miami paid all this money to McCain about 1 month ago or so. I think they paid him all that money, though, to be a true, true cornerback. And I think if they have to play Minkah in the slot, they're going to move McCain to the outside. And guys like Lippitt and Tankersley, they might be just be your second string guys there. Because I think Minkah, look, he's going to be great, I think, wherever he plays, because he seems like one of those guys where I'm not sure if he'll be a star, but I know he won't be a bust. I just know he won't be a bust. So where he plays will be very, very interesting. And I don't even know if they know yet, honestly.
No, I don't either. I think that's really kind of the big question. Can Matt Burke, the defensive coordinator, find the right way to use Fitzpatrick? Because this is a guy, like you said, it's the odds of him being a bust are not against him. They are for him being a stellar player. And the Dolphins really need to start getting, you know, use out of their first round and even their second round draft picks in their rookie seasons, because we just haven't. Charles Harris didn't do anything last year. McMillan was injured. You really kind of have to go back to Jarvis Landry when he was drafted and see the production he made. But we just, Devontae Parker hasn't done much.
That's not Jordan Phillips.
Waiting and waiting. Jordan Phillips, he took him, you know, a defensive lineman I get to an extent. We had a pretty good defensive line when he came in. But Fitzpatrick, if you're going to draft a guy that doesn't fit a specific hole on your team, you better find a way to get him on the field. Otherwise, you wasted a pick. And this guy's got all-world talent. There is no reason to waste him sitting on the bench to play other guys. You got to get him in there. Like you said, throw him in at nickel. Let him kind of roam around a bit and cover those tight ends. Let him, put him in a position to make plays, but get him on the field.
And it's almost, you need him to be on the field. And it's almost one of those things where they might have to find a way with him to make it work, because we all saw the reports right after the draft where Ross was like, well, should we take him? Are you sure you guys don't want to slide down and trade down? Are you sure? So they took him in this draft, and they almost have to justify that pick now, I think, or else it's going to look really bad. So I don't care if he's playing linebacker, free safety, strong safety, nickel corner. They better find a spot where he can excel the most and put him there. And if that means you have to move someone else, so be it.
Yeah, you know what? That's a great point, Mike, because I didn't even really think about that either. But it is so true. When your owner comes out and questions that selection, and it's noted that he questioned it, you have to show the owner you know what you're doing, because if you don't, your job's on the line. And in Miami, we know you got to win. So, yeah, that's a great point. And I think it's definitely something that they have to keep in mind whether they like it or not.
Yep. Now, shifting to the other side of the ball, obviously the big name that's gone is Jarvis Landry. We all know what happened there. We don't even really have to talk about that much. He's gone. He's saying nasty things about the Dolphins. We get it. But overall, the wide receiver group as a whole, I know a lot of it sort of hinges on Devontae Parker and how he performs, because so far in Miami, as I say in this podcast all the time, he looks like Tarzan, but he plays like Jane. At the end of the day, he produces, you know, almost nothing. He's going to be the key at wide receiver. But the guys they brought in to replace Landry and Wilson and Amendola, what are your thoughts on them? And what do you think about the wide receivers overall as a group?
I like the wide receiver group. And I'm going to actually I think a little bit differently than you do on Devontae Parker, because I don't think he is a key cog to this wide receiver group. He's largely been disappointing. This is a guy that can't really get out of his own injuries, and it's a mental thing for him. If it's nagging, it bothers him, and he can't play at 100%. It doesn't matter that it's just a little bit of a tinge in his leg. It's a mental thing for him. But if you take him out of the equation, if he does exactly what he did last year, this team can still be good, because you've got a guy like Albert Wilson that's got speed. Throw him on the outside if Parker's not cutting it. Get Amendola on the slot. I don't know what's going to happen with Leonte Carew, but I like Drew Morgan. And if you can get a spot for Morgan, bring him in. These are guys that want to play. Kenny Stills on the outside. Put Jakeem Grant in there in the slot. You have a lot of options. The best part about it is you mentioned Jarvis Landry being gone, and I love Jarvis Landry. But I think that there's a handcuff. When you drop back and Landry's the guy that's running that short route, you're going to drop the ball off to him. It's a cop-out. Now you've got more options, because you've got two slot guys that can do the same job that Landry did, but they're more explosive with the ball afterwards. And that's not to say that Landry wasn't. He made plays. But realistically, he was that go-to guy, that drop-off guy. Let's force the quarterback into making some throws elsewhere. I like the fact that we've got a lot of different names in there, and I do like the fact that Danny Amendola is there. Even if he deals with those nagging injuries like he always does, there's a leadership about him and a veteran that people can approach, that these other players can come up to, and there's no ego with him. He knows where he came from, and I think that's something that can bind these guys. So I think it's going to be a very interesting dynamic. I think the wide receivers are going to be a lot better than people give them credit for, or at least think that they're going to do this year. And I think if Ryan Tannehill stays healthy, I think the wide receivers are going to look pretty damn good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the one guy I really want to see is the wide receiver that we picked up from the Chiefs here in Wilson. I had him on our podcast about a month ago now, and I was really impressed with him. Just talking to him for about 15 minutes or so, I came away so impressed with him, how he just handled himself and came off. I think he's a guy who is an ascending guy in this league, someone who just gets better and better each year. With the Chiefs, he was a little bit handcuffed because he was behind guys in the passing game, like they had Travis Kelce at tight end. They had Hunt there at running back. So he didn't see the ball that much. I think in Miami, he's going to see the ball a lot more. There was reports that in OTAs, they were even lining him up at running back some. So who knows how they're going to use him. It might be really creative. And with his speed, and I just think he's one of those guys who's going to show up each week and play hard no matter what, and will play through all the injuries. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing how he fits in this offense, because I think he could be a guy who's just a big play waiting to happen. And when you line up guys like him and Grant and Stills, the speed we have at wide receiver, stretch of defense, I think is going to cause many teams fits.
Yeah, when you look at Wilson, there was an article by or somebody posted in one of the national medias, and honestly, I don't know who it was, but said that Albert Wilson's was one of the worst contracts.
I spoke about that on the show.
Yeah. And the thing is it's basically a 2-year deal. There's not a whole lot of guaranteed in that first 2 years. But the Dolphins are paying him, and this is, I think, what somebody said. It might have even been that same author. The Dolphins are paying him for what they expect him to be, not what he is right now. Yep. And like you mentioned, in Kansas City, the Chiefs weren't known to throw the ball a lot. In fact, I think they went almost an entire season without a receiver catching a touchdown pass either last year or the year before. So you're expecting Wilson to be the guy in Kansas City, and that's not him. He's a lot more than that, and I think we're going to see it. But the wide receiver group, it's going to be interesting to see how the Dolphins break this down. We know that Parker, Wilson, and Amendola, and Jakeem Grant, and Stills are making the team. Those are your five right there.
Yep.
If they go with the six, is Leonte Carew going to take a spot from Drew Morgan? Rashawn Scott, who leapfrogged him twice over the last 2 years in the depth chart, is he going to be that guy? So then you've got Isaiah Ford, who the Dolphins were really high on until he got injured last year. So now he's back in the mix. So there's a lot of stuff in there with these receivers outside of the top five. There could be a pretty good competition for that sixth spot if the Dolphins decide to go with six.
I think they will carry six, too. and who that one is six is going to be the question, I think. I think, honestly, it might come down to Ford or Leonte Carew. Leonte Carew, we gave up so many picks to take him, but he has been here, I think, long enough to where it's like now or never with him. So this is a big, big training camp for him. We'll see. Running backs. What are your thoughts on the running backs? I know a lot of fans are in love with the rookie from Arizona State, but we really don't know much about him. And we don't know how he will adapt to the NFL. We just don't know. But when you talk about Drake and Frank Gore, what are your thoughts there? And what do you think we'll see this year out of Drake?
I think Drake is the real deal, and I don't question the Dolphins' scouts in terms of running backs, because they took Lamar Miller fourth or fifth round. They took Jay Ajayi, I think it was the fifth round. They get Kenyon Drake. Now they've gone out and get Kalen Ballage in the mid rounds. There's room for these guys, and I like that dynamic. I mean, who knows? We might be talking in another 2 years of Kenyon Drake being traded at the trade deadline, and everybody's going to go up in arms, and then all of a sudden Ballage comes out and just tears it up. It seems like that's the MO for this team. I like Frank Gore. I love it. I love the fact that he's going to hopefully finish his career in Miami, where he started it all. Again, it goes back for me, veteran leadership, leader in the locker room, not a guy that's necessarily lead by example, but here, let me show you how to do it, and not afraid to be that teacher. And I think that's important. I think Kenyon Drake is the real deal. I think he's got the right tools in his head to go out and succeed. And this kind of goes back to Adam Gase again. He's got football players that love to play football, and you can't say that about guys like Sue. You can't say that about guys like Jarvis Landry. They're in it for themselves. They are in it for the money. They are in it for what they're going to get out of it afterwards. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not knocking those guys. But if you're going to build a team, get guys like Albert Wilson, who just love to absorb the game of football. They love to be instructed on how to get better. That's where Danny Amendola comes in. That's where Frank Gore comes in. These are guys that have been there. They know what they're doing. I think Frank Gore is going to bring a lot to the table for the Dolphins running backs in terms of just what goes on inside that team meeting room and how it translates to the field. I think it's a three-man unit. I don't think the Dolphins will carry four running backs this year. I think potentially one of those running backs will end up on the practice squad, that fourth running back, I guess you could say. I like Senarius Perry. I just think that there's a lot of needs elsewhere on the team right now, that keeping an extra running back is going to hurt somewhere that you may want to keep. I think the Dolphins may very well keep four tight ends, though, which would be kind of surprising.
I think they have to, too. And I think the guy who can play a little bit of H-back there is Marquise Gray, who has a little bit of history playing fullback H-back. So he could be that sort of fourth de facto running back, but also a tight end. So I think that's where they save a roster spot. But I'm with you. They have to carry four tight ends because we really have unknowns there at that spot. And I think it's a high ceiling for guys like someone like Mike Gesicki, but we still don't know yet. And it might take, you know, 6 or 8 games before he gets his feet under him. So I agree. We have to carry four tight ends.
I'm a huge fan of AJ Derby's. I really think that this is a guy that people in the NFL are going to be talking about in another 5 years, that he's probably going to be that tight end on the radar in fantasy football leagues, whether he's with Miami or somebody else. I just think he's got that factor about him that once it clicks for him, once he gets the opportunities, he's going to take it. I think Miami bringing him in last year was a smart move. They need to get him on the field. They need to pair him with Gesicki, because I think if they can put those two pass catching tight ends on the outside, that's giving you a completely new dynamic as well. And then you've got a guy like Durham Smythe. And Smythe is kind of an enigma here because we know that he can block, but this is a guy that Notre Dame wasn't asked to catch passes.
Yep.
But he can, and nobody knows that. It's like the steal of the draft, potentially, at tight end.
I think so, too. And the fact that he can, that he is such a high-quality guy who can block, is going to put him on the field a lot more than people think. I think because if you can block at a high level at tight end, you can just not hurt yourself on the field. So I think we're going to see him on the field more than maybe somebody else like AJ Derby and stuff. Not because overall he's a more well-rounded guy, just because if you can block, you can block. And I think having someone on the field like that won't hurt you, especially with our offensive line, which I guess we can start talking about next. Offensive line, it's a lot of the same faces as last year, but the optimism seems to be higher, which I can sort of see, because you have a guy in there like Sitton. He's a little bit older, but he's still an all-world player. At center, we have a guy who's not going to be, you know, on the sidelines all year, just waiting for Sunday to play a game. So I see that there. But the rest of the spots are the same guys who were there last year. What are your thoughts on the offensive line?
I think the best part about this is there's a continuity that has not been present for a good 5-6 years. I mean, even under Joe Philbin, when you got into training camp, they rotated every day. One guy would start one day, the next day somebody else started. And it was just this rotation. And you can't get a good feel for your other offensive lineman. You can't grow as a unit and get to know every single move that the guy makes when you're spending the entire training camp rotating in and out with all these different units. I think this year we're finally going to see this is your starting lineup. Juwan James, Jesse Davis, Daniel Kilgore, Sitton, and, of course, Laremy Tunsil. These guys are going to be working every single day. And like you said, Mike Pouncey's not going to be standing on the sidelines.
Yeah.
Daniel Kilgore is going to be practicing. So I think that's huge. So the optimism is high because there's continuity there. You're going in and you know, and from day one, these guys are going to have an opportunity to get better together as opposed to getting better individually and not knowing who's going to line up next to them one practice to the next.
Yep, totally agree. Because for years past with guys like Philbin and even I think Tony Sperano as well, they would shift guys all through camp, and then it'd be like a week before week one, here's our offensive line. Well, you've shifted these guys around so much, it's like now they're going to need one more month to just find out their new role. I never understood it. So I agree. That's a big thing. At right tackle, James, I'm a little surprised he's back, honestly. Just because when he left last year and got hurt and missed the final, whatever it was, 7, 8, 9 games, whatever it was, the offensive line actually started to play a little bit better without him. And the fact they're paying him $9 million this year, not shocked by it, but a little surprised. Because I remember when I had on Armando Salguero, probably back in like February or March, just before free agency, we actually talked about this. We're like, when he wasn't on the field last year, the offensive line kind of played a little bit better. So why would you pay someone $9 million when they were out? But for him, it's a big year for him because he's now on a one-year deal, essentially, and he's looking at that next big payday next year. So it'll be really interesting to see how he performs. because I think the right side of that line makes me a little bit nervous, just a little bit.
Well, I'll tell you what, the interesting thing about that is Juwan James actually was one of the highest rated right tackles in the NFL last year for the times that he played. The question that I have, and maybe the Dolphins will be able to answer it this year, is when James was healthy and he was playing last year, there was total garbage playing at right guard.
It was.
And
true.
He had no support. And then when James left, when he was injured and taken out, all of a sudden Jesse Davis comes in to play guard. You've got Ted Larson or Sam Young that jumped out to right tackle. Jesse Davis made a huge difference because now all of a sudden he knew the signals. He knew the calls on the inside. And then they would rotate Davis to the outside, and Davis did well out there. So I'm not so sure that it was Juwan James's problem.
Yeah, maybe not.
You know, that the team was better without him as much as it was they finally got the right guard position taken care of, because James is going to need some help. And when you've got a guy sitting on the inside, and I believe it was Sam Young, that was constantly getting called for holding, constantly getting called for false starts. And then you got James sitting out there going, I can't rely on this guy. And now they're bull rushing on the inside where I'm supposed to double up. He's not doing his job, and I'm getting beat to the outside. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see which James is going to be on the field this year.
And I think you can also take that to the opposite sideline too with Laramie Tunsil. Last year, he lined up next to guys like Jake Brendel and left guard for a while. I mean, he lined up next to a who's who of who, you know what I mean? So I think having someone like sit next to him, he doesn't have to worry. He doesn't have to try to overcompensate as well. So that is a great point.
Exactly.
And we're going to see those guys, I think, having more solid guys next to them, how they perform, because the middle of that line last year was miserable. It really was. Center, guard, and guard, I thought, for most of the year at least, was not very good. And now we got guys like Larson on the bench, where I think that's a great spot for him because he can play right guard, left guard, center. You want a guy like that on your bench who can fill in at multiple spots. Sam Young as a swing tackle, I guess that's okay for the most part. I'm not a huge Sam Young guy, but I get it. So I think just on the offensive line to have a little more depth is going to help as well, because I think the offensive line on paper, I have more optimism about it this year than I have in years past for all the reasons we talked about. So I agree. It's going to be really interesting to see how they play. Sitton, I think, is a big deal because Sitton's a big-time player, a real big-time player.
Yeah, and I do agree, too. Again, it goes back to continuity. When these guys can be playing every single day, Sam Young, I don't even think he makes the roster this year. Same as last year. I think they're going to cut him, wait until after the first week, bring him back in because his contract's guaranteed. Yeah, it saves the roster spot. It allows you to slip somebody through that might get picked up on the waivers, and then you can move them over to the practice squad. So I anticipate that happening with Sam Young. You look at Jake Brendel. He is a guy that's versatile enough that he can jump from center to guard as a backup if need be. So when you see these guys out there and they get a cramp, you need somebody that you can rely on to go in for a series. And those are the kind of guys that we have now to play those depth roles. Whereas in the last maybe 5-6 years, those guys have been asked to start for a period of time.
And they
weren't ready.
Yeah. So I guess the last spot we now have to talk about, always the hot topic when talking about the Miami Dolphins, quarterback and Ryan Tannehill. I've said on this podcast many times, I think the talk on him, it's one of those things I don't even like to talk about that much anymore, because the fans have sort of gone into two camps. You got the fans where he can do no wrong. If he throws a pick or an interception, not his fault. Why are you blaming him? Not him. And those fans drive me nuts. And you got the other fans who drive me equally as nuts, where no matter he could throw for 500 yards or 5 touchdowns, he still stinks. So no matter what he does, it's never good enough.
Right.
Tannehill, though, if he's healthy, is the perfect quarterback for this team right now. It's a big year for him, obviously, because at a certain point, he has been here since 2012. At a certain point, you do sort of have to perform, lead a team to the playoffs. I know in 2016, he did lead them, even though he was hurt, didn't play. But he has to, take the next step is so cliche, but it's true on some level. Take that next step. Be the guy. Lead him to a 10-win year, and I want to see him in a playoff game. But this might be the last year or so if he doesn't perform either, because I don't know how many times you can keep throwing the same guy out there year after year and expecting something else as a result. What are your thoughts on quarterback?
Yeah, well, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to the competition behind him
True.
With Brock Osweiler. Osweiler's contract is guaranteed up to, I think, $660,000 this year. Then you've got David Thales and Bryce Petty. I really like what I saw to David Thales last year.
Me too.
So it'll be an interesting competition there, because Osweiler's not going to cost that much if you have to dump him. But I really think he's got the lead in this just because he knows the system a little bit, which puts him on a little bit more of an even keel with Thales. As far as Tannehill goes, everything you just said is so true. I think the knock on him isn't really warranted, because you look at this guy, comes in 2012, but only played college quarterback for 2 years. He's with Mike Sherman, and he's a rookie in the NFL. You're going to struggle. Second year, he's got Mike Sherman, and Sherman gets fired. You get Bill Lazor in there, and then Joe Philbin gets fired, and just this whole thing continues, and you get another offensive coordinator. He was very productive under Adam Gase. Nobody knows what he's going to be like this year because he didn't play last year. And I think that, for me, I don't think his knee is going to be a problem. So many quarterbacks have come back from this. Running backs have come back from this. This is not something new. What is going to be my focal point, if you will, is how is he mentally going to handle that knee? Is he going to go out and play like he's never had a knee injury? Or is he going to go out and play tepid, like, I don't want to make that cut because my knee could give out and I'm out again? So that's kind of what I'm looking at. Is he going to try to become a pocket passer, which he is not? Or is he going to still have the confidence in his leg to roll out, make those long passes? Because I'll tell you right now, anybody in the NFL, I will put Ryan Tannehill up on the move, out of the pocket, with anybody.
Absolutely agree.
Because he is that good.
On the run.
He sucks in the pocket. But outside, the guy's money.
Yep, absolutely. And I agree as well. I think I'm not worried about the knee that much either. I think he'll be fine there. What I want to see from him this year is, in previous years, pretty much since this time here, Miami's offense, you know, most games, slow starting team in the first quarter, does nothing. Even overall for the season, they always start slow in September and they sort of pick up the pace, you know, later on in the season. But in games specifically, they come out most games sleepwalking in the first quarter. Now, who's to blame for that? I don't know. But he is the quarterback at the end of the day. So some of that, if not the majority of that, might be on him. I hope this year when we see him on the field, we see a new sense of urgency from him and we see a little bit more fire and just something a little different, because we can't just not show up for like a first quarter on offense, which we've seen a lot under him in his time in Miami. He's been here since 2012. It's 2018. I mean, at a certain point, like, this is it. And I think for him this year, this is it. I mean, he really has to perform well.
Yeah, I think mediocrity is not going to cut it this year with Tannehill.
No.
I think,
no excuses.
I will say this, though. No, none. But I do think he's going to benefit from having last year off. I think it really gave him – now, if I'm a quarterback for the Miami Dolphins and I'm injured last year – he was at the practices. He was at the training facility. He was on the sideline at games. He was in the film room. He was watching team tape. Absorb it. You have an opportunity to look and see it without having to try to fix it. Look at it, read it, see what the reactions are, see what you should have done, what Jay Cutler could have done, should have done, what other quarterbacks did. Raekwon McMillan said the same thing. The best thing that could have happened to me last year is I got to learn from other people's mistakes. We saw Tannehill on the sideline last year becoming a leader, cheering his teammates on. That has to transfer over to him being on the field as the leader and saying, hey, I'm not just going to cheer you from the sidelines. I'm going to run down the field. I'm going to give you a high five. I'm going to get pumped up. I'm going to start yelling. That's what he did on the sidelines last year. That's what he needs to do on the field this year.
Yep, absolutely. And last point I'll make is, and this is something we're going to see, I think, really early in the season. Landry's gone. We got that. And Ryan loved throwing to Landry. If he was in a pinch, didn't know what to do, you could always look towards Landry's spot, throw him the ball. Odds are he was going to make a play. It might only be for 5 or 6 yards, but it was sort of that safety valve type play. He's always there, reliable, no worries. With him gone and with him now knowing that he's not there, Landry, does that affect his game positively? We're like, okay, I am free to throw it anywhere. I don't have to worry about Landry force feeding him the ball. He's not there as that security blanket. Or does that hamper him thinking, oh my God, I have to find someone else because I know I don't have Landry And we're going to find that out right away, I think, and how he now plays with no Landry, because it's been a while since we've had a wide receiver like Landry, who was sort of the center point of the offense and had that connection, no matter what he says now, had that connection with our quarterback. So I want to see how that dynamic sort of fits now with Tannehill and no Landry.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. It's the crutch. It's like we were talking about earlier.
It's the crutch, exactly.
It's the crutch, and he's coming off of the crutch both for his knee and with Landry. So will it make him a better quarterback? I think we're going to find out the kind of quarterback that he is because of it. Because either Jarvis Landry made him look better than he is, or he made Jarvis Landry look better than what he is. And I think that if he gets in there, Landry's not there. The right quarterback is not going to go, I'm going to look over here for Jakeem Grant, or I'm going to look for Danny Amendola. I'm going to scan the field a little bit more. I've got four receivers out there in a pattern. I've got Mike Gesicki out there in a pattern. Hey, I'm in trouble. Guess what? Look around the field, find the open receiver, and throw it. How many passes did we see him toss to Landry last year, and Kenny Stills is wide open 30, 40 yards down the field?
Yeah, I know.
So hopefully, without Landry being that dump off, that cushion that he's got, he's going to scan the field a little bit more, and maybe we'll see some more dynamic plays from him. But then again, like you said, it could go the opposite direction.
Could go the opposite way,
there.
Too.
Yeah. So I think that's going to be a key to what we view Tannehill as this year. And like you said, yes, we're going to see it early in the season.
We're going to see it quick. And look, I am rooting for him. We're all rooting for him at the end of the day, but I'm really rooting for him. I hope he's the guy, because if he's not, it's an ugly process trying to find the next guy. And we don't, you know, so I don't want to go through that. So hopefully Tannehill comes back healthy and he sort of picks up where he left off in 2016. It's a long time ago, I know. But if he can pick up where he left off there, I think we'll be okay in 2018. Brian, it's been great having you on tonight. I hope we can have you on again down the road. Everyone, be sure to check out the website, finfanatic.com. A lot of great articles, news, breaking news. They got it all up there. Check them out, finfanatic.com. Any last words, Brian?
No, hey, appreciate you having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. I forgot how much I loved doing radio. This is great stuff. So
it's a lot of fun.
Kind of relit that fire a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
My wife is not going to like that. But
All right. So everyone, have a great day, and we'll talk to you again after a while.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.